We're waiting to talk to Mick Rennheisen, my great friend, former deputy mayor. Well, you've worn enough hats. If we have to talk about all your past jobs and everything else, the hour will be over. Hey, congratulations and good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Glass. Thank you, and thank you for having me on. We haven't spoken like this in a while on air. It used to be a weekly function of my former deputy mayor role for about, what, 5 years we did that?
Oh, at least. At least 5 years. Well, maybe not that long, but plenty of it. It was fun. You are one of the four deputy mayors, as Mary Catherine Carmichael is leaving that position. Larry Allen will be taking over at the end of the month. I asked Mayor Hamilton today if that's the record. Does he have the record for most deputy mayors in a two-term mayor? He laughed. We weren't sure, but if anybody would know, it would be you. Are you part of this record-setting crew?
You know, I think I am, because I can go back to Tommy Allison, and she had one or two deputy mayors in her 13-year term. And then I'm thinking Mayor Fernandez had one, and Mayor Cruzan, he might have had four over the course of his 12 years.
Well, because Wason was one of those, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then he was in there for a while. John Weikart was there for a year or so.
Heslin.
Maria Heslin, and before that, James McNamara. So there's a tie.
Ooh, there's still time. I will bring that up with Mayor Hamilton next Tuesday, that he still has time to set the record. Well, we have a good laugh because you were in that chair. You've worn many hats for the city, mainly in the Parks and Rec Department, and then wearing the hat of the deputy mayor, then having all the departments underneath you. But you have another Hall of Fame induction ceremony coming up this Friday, the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. As we were joking before we went to the break last time, this is not your first Hall of Fame, not your first rodeo. Well, that's kind of why you're heading into the County Hall of Fame this Friday. How many Hall of Fames are you in, buddy?
You know, most of them, I think all of them, are softball related. So we have a Bloomington City Softball Hall of Fame. Not too many people probably know that even exists. We created it in the early 80s, and that's when the sport was really growing rapidly, mostly adult softball, although youth sports and youth softball were growing rapidly in that same decade. Later, youth sports would surpass the adult market, but at the time of the heyday of adult softball in Bloomington, we had over 400 teams playing between the summer leagues and the fall leagues. 225, I think, was the highest in any one of those sessions. So that was a lot of people in this city played softball, and we created a Hall of Fame to honor those who, even prior to the heyday of softball here, when there were only eight teams in a city league in the 60s and 50s, there were some great players, and so we went back in time and tried to honor the ones that had played before the boom of the sport grew in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and I became a Hall of Fame member there. Now, I would always stipulate this. There's always an asterisk by anything that I'm in a Hall of Fame for. None of this is because I hit home runs or made baskets or won a city championship in golf or any of those things. This is all related to support roles, trying to help our community get national softball tournaments. A lot of people are familiar with that function of the Parks Department and others that helped us do that and create opportunities for local people to play on, I think, pretty great facilities, including Winslow Sports Complex and Twin Lakes. Those were things I had my hands in, along with many, many other people, that I think is the reason I went into not just the City Hall of Fame, but our state Softball Hall of Fame, and then our National Softball Hall of Fame. That one took on a little bit different focus. Obviously, I was involved in the national side with different areas of interest. I was on the National Equipment Committee and the Long Range Planning Committee, and I think my years of service there were probably the reason that they put me in the Hall of Fame in that group. So I guess this will be my fourth Hall of Fame, and three of them are softball, and the fourth one's pretty much because of those other three.
Well, that all counts.
Because of that. Yeah, well, and I'm proud of all of those, and this one is particularly rewarding. It's an honor to be recognized in your community when people here think that you've done things that make the sport arena, the sport environment here better for them, better for the community. That's really rewarding for a person who loves sports to begin with, not good enough to set any records in any of them, but had some, I guess, interest and skill to try to help recruit and bring good people and events here to our community. And so I'm very proud of that, but I'm also very thankful for the many, many people who helped make that happen. It certainly wasn't me and me by myself.
Why did softball explode when it did, Mick? And did you realize that at an early time that the expansion of the game was going to be something that Bloomington needed to get into? How did this all evolve? I find that fascinating.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting, Mike. In the late 70s, I started playing as a senior in high school just for something to do in the summer. And I fell in love with it right away. And I grew up in Jasper, so very sports-oriented community there as well. And many people played softball in the summer that were adults and young people just beginning to learn how to play the adult softball side, because most of us played baseball and were converted to softball as there were no more options to play baseball in adult sports. So I saw the beginning of a pretty popular sport in the 70s. And when I came to Bloomington and got the parks job as the sports coordinator, there was already a league of 105 teams that played on Upper Cascades and Lower Cascades, just three diamonds. And there were restrictions. We couldn't have any more than 105 teams. We had five games a night, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And you could only play on one team because of the limited capacity that we had in fields. So all through the 80s, there was way more demand than there was supply of field space. And that led us to start to look at expanding and building a new sports facility to accommodate the growth of softball in our community. We also had state tournaments. Bloomington is a very popular place for people to want to come. It's a tourist destination. I think the convention center topic, you know, it's another entire animal, but it's why we are very attractive for a lot of reasons. People want to come here. And so we had everything but the number of fields you needed to have bigger events than just amateur state softball tournaments, although we had many of those. So I happened to play on a couple of softball teams that qualified for nationals, and when I went to those nationals, it really spurred my interest in trying to create a venue that could host the same thing in Bloomington. I thought we had everything else we needed but the fields. So we acquired Twin Lakes, which actually was two lakes and used to be a water source for the city way back in the early 20s. It had long been abandoned and it was largely dried up, but there was still some water in it. People thought we were crazy when we decided to build there, but it had all the other things we were looking for: access to a major highway, 37, now I-69, power, water, other basic infrastructure you needed. And we just had to engineer the water problem, and that was easy enough. Just lift it out of there and put in French drains, and that's how Twin Lakes was created. But the impetus behind it was building something that our local teams could play on and enjoy, that was a step up from the Cascades Diamonds, adding more diamonds to the overall number we had so we could have practices, and youth softball on the girls' side was starting to grow.
Well,
so
you wouldn't have to turn anybody away either, right?
No, and we could expand our league offerings from the 105 limit to many, many more, and then attract those state and national tournaments, bigger ones than we had with just the three diamonds that we had before. So that was kind of the way it worked. Now, why did adult softball grow so much in that era? It's the exact opposite now. It's gone back down to less than 105 teams, and I think that's got to do with youth sports growing. And if you've got kids playing youth sports, one of them plays baseball a lot, you wouldn't have time to play adult softball now because you're chasing your son around or your daughter around or both to their various activities. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just time-consuming and expensive to do, and that has limited the opportunities for adults to play and recreate on their own.
Yeah, so, it's almost like almost like a bachelor league, or not a bachelor league, but we'll be at Winslow tonight. The 9U Bloomington Junior Baseball City Championships begin at 7 o'clock. So the Curry Chevrolet will be in action this evening. Could be for the last time, Mick. We're a little shorthanded. We got kids on vacation. One of our pitchers broke his hand, but we'll hang in there. We'll tough it out. That's for sure.
Well, hopefully the kids will have fun. That's what it's all about anyway.
And it's not 98 degrees with the heat index of 108 either. That's awfully nice. Mick Renhuizen is our guest, a former deputy mayor, the Parks and Rec director, and going into the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame coming up on Friday, part of the 13th class. The enshrinement ceremony will be at the Monroe Convention Center coming up this weekend. So go to Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame if you have not purchased your tickets yet. You'll need to do that by tomorrow so they have a good head count on dinner. So you never got into this thinking, well, one day I'll be in the Hall of Fame. It was just your love for sport and everything else. And the Softball Hall of Fame on the national part doesn't tell the entire story. You've been involved with a million different sports here, including Indiana University, PGA Tour Golf. What sparked it for you? Was it playing as a kid? How did you get involved with that?
Yeah, I'd say like many of us, we saw a parent do it. In my case, my dad umpired Little League baseball, and he, you know, introduced me to golf when I was five and baseball when I was age appropriate. Who doesn't have a pitch and catch with their dad, the famous movie we all know. That I actually used a line from that movie, "If you build it, they will come," when we opened Twin Lakes in 1992. I think we get exposed to sports by our parents. And then, you know, for some people it becomes a kind of a passion. And for me, it did. And so when I came to IU to go to school here, I thought I wanted to teach and coach, and I wanted to coach basketball, and I wanted to coach at the highest level. But having not played at the highest level, you know, that was going to be a stretch for me. So I didn't end up getting the opportunity to coach. I ended up in the Parks and Rec field, which by fate was the perfect place for me to go. It gave me so many opportunities to, I think, broaden my interest in a variety of sports. Instead of maybe just being a basketball coach or some type of a coach, I ended up being able to be exposed to a variety of sports. We built a 9-hole addition to Cascades when I was the director. We obviously built the Twin Lakes Sports Park. We improved Winslow, although that had been built prior to my tenure as parks director. We acquired the Twin Lakes Recreation Center. We expanded the pools, although we didn't build anything new. We changed them from kind of lap lanes to more current type of water slides and things facility. So although I got so many chances to be involved in a variety of sports, I don't think I would have had I continued my original path. But yeah, my dad started my interest. My mom played golf too. And I can remember many a time when the two of us would go out and play golf after dad got off from his teaching duties in high school in Jasper. And those are fond memories. And I guess those stuck with me. And it was something I wanted to do. That dad always told me, and my mom too, do something you enjoy because you're going to spend a lot of time at it.
That is absolutely the case. And the angle on this is your interest versus being in city life in the Parks and Rec Department versus the greater good. How did you balance what you thought this is going to be great because I like it versus this is what the community needs?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. I think a lot of us have myopic vision. We see what we want to see because it interests us. And I was guilty of that as a young person in the profession as well. And I'll never forget when I became the director of parks in 1996, we had gone through a 5-year master planning process and we had done a survey right at the very beginning of my tenure. And this is the statistically valid valid survey that we do every 5 years where certain amounts of households in the community randomly selected get to respond and tell us what they're most interested in terms of parks and recreation services. And if you'd have asked me, I would have listed, you know, 5 sport facilities as the top 5 because that's where I came from. That was my prior 15 years of experience were in the sports division side. Well, the number one response was build trails. And it's been that for the last 25 years. So that doesn't mean other things haven't come up to number 2, 3, 4, and 5 and have moved around. But trail building and trail connections have been number one. So I guess the direct answer is listen to your customer and they'll tell you what they want. And if you do what they want, you'll have a successful operation, whatever that might be, city government services or a business.
And that makes sense because in government work. It's not private work. You are trying to figure out what is the greater good. And the trails, I mean, when I walk them, hey, there's one right, there's a rail trail. There's Parks Commissioner Mick Renheisen on it. So you're it's interesting the different layers you fall into because of the large umbrella you would carry in that department. Is there one project when you were in charge that you wish you had 10 more bucks to put into? Was there something that just didn't meet your grand expectations in it, maybe because of the government side of things?
You know, that's a great question. There's not a project that I've done that I didn't, that I wished I didn't have 10 more dollars. There's always something that you cut out, and there's always something you regret. It's kind of when you build your house and you go, boy, at the very end, I'll use my own house for example. We didn't put irrigation in, and I like my lawn to look nice and not have weeds in it. And so it was a compromise I struggled with, and we didn't do it. And I regretted it immediately. And, you know, we put it in 5 or 10 years later. But yeah, there's always decisions like that you have to make. I think there is a facility I wished we could have gotten done that never came to fruition, and that was the ice arena project. That's a long story I could tell on another program entirely. It's got a lot of
we'll save that for hockey season.
Yeah, but there, the only thing I say is that because there are we only have one ice arena in Bloomington, and the nearest ones away from Bloomington are 45 miles away at least, Columbus and south side of Indianapolis. We're lucky to have one, but I know that it's not of the standard that the rest of the parks facilities tend to want to be and can be. But they're very expensive to operate, and they are very seasonal in nature. Some people would say they shouldn't be seasonal. It should be year-round, but you have to have demand for the service. Having said that, that is one I wished we could go back in time and could have found a way to raise enough funds to build a new facility. It's what we really need to do instead of kind of continuing to patch this 1966 created Frank Southern Center. Again, great asset to the community, just probably not the standard that Bloomington would expect, as we have other facilities that are pretty nice. That one kind of tails behind that, but all the other ones we did build, yeah, I wish the nine holes at Cascades could have been a little longer that we added, especially with technology and equipment, you know, growing, and there's no more land to buy to get it any bigger than it is. So, you know, that's just something we'll have to live with. I wished Twin Lakes could have been 8 diamonds instead of 4. We could have had bigger tournaments, but same thing, not enough land in that area, couldn't assemble enough land somewhere else. So almost every one of those projects has, I wished we had more money to do it in it.
Well, and the money part is interesting because you can't have a bake sale or a car wash to just, you know, raise that whatever. You have to go through the budget process, and it is tax dollars from local citizens, and that's another an interesting balance you have to find, correct? Not everything can have, you know, gold-plated handles and everything else.
No, that's right. And I'm thankful that our community values recreation like it does. If this is a lot of other places in Indiana and around the country, if your residents don't support it, don't want to pay taxes for it, then you just don't have what we have here. And I always thought this was one of the great places to work in the Midwest because people care about recreation so passionately that, you know, they push for anything and every kind of sport you can imagine. We've had people suggest we build this and build that. In fact, they're still arguing we should have an in-city soccer complex, even though there's one at the county parks that has one. So, you know, that's a good problem to have. It's when people don't care about it, don't want to fund it, think it's a non-essential service. That's when you have challenges and problems. Would any parks director like to have more money for the services they deliver? Of course. But I think here we're lucky. We have a community that cares and is willing to invest in it.
Yeah, finding that just that the responsible balance on that teeter-totter right there in the middle. Mick Renheisen is my guest. He will be inducted into the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame coming up this Friday. The meet and greet will be from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Monroe Convention Center. That is not a ticketed event, so stop by and say hi. The entire class of 10, well, most of the entire class of 10 will be in attendance, and the program starts at 6 o'clock, so you get a nice hour to see a little memorabilia and do the meet and greet before the program begins around 7:30. Tickets are available, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Just Google it. It pops right up. It's the first one in the search bar. Good job on that one, internet people. Excellent, excellent. And now that you're going into Hall of Fame number four, as we talked about earlier, how do you put your speech together, Mick? Because when you've been in government as long as you have, when you've worked it, worked, I guess, at with IU for as long as you have, you have so many connections to the community. What is the time limit, and when did you start practicing, and how's the editing going? You've got about 72 hours.
So 3 to 5 minutes is the time limit.
You got no chance, buddy. You're breaking that. You're breaking that easy.
Well, I have a little surprise. I'm the last inductee that night, so you know people have had more than enough of speechifying. I'm sure their patience will be have very little tolerance left for a long, lengthy end of the 10 inductee speeches. But I have a little surprise for that I'll just say for the induction. We can talk about it next week if you want to see how it goes over. But yes, I've given my share of speeches over my 40-year public career. I think people might often be surprised by statements like this from folks like me who have done many speeches, but they always make me nervous, and many of them make me emotional. So I will do my best with my little surprise to try to minimize that and keep it to a short, sweet, and hopefully entertaining segment of time for the last of the 10 induction speeches, if you will, of the evening.
How did you get last?
I don't know. That's the board had some process for choosing to do that. It could be alphabetical for all I know. There's a lot of people in the front end of the alphabet that are going in before the R, so it could very well be that. It could be some other way that they picked in. It doesn't matter to me. I have no offense at all. I'm thrilled to be going into this Hall of Fame.
I'm going to ask you this. Who is your sponsor, and who notified you when the official decision was made?
Yeah, well, this ties to something that I kind of glossed over. You asked earlier about the IU experiences and sports that I've had, and Kit Klingelhofer is my sponsor. He called me, and Kit and I are longtime friends. In fact, he and Joe Smith are the two individuals that got me started with IU athletics. When I was working with Joe on high school radio broadcasts, I was his color analyst, and in doing that for football and basketball, you had to do your own stats. And so that's kind of between my knowledge of officiating and playing basketball, football, baseball, and golf. I kind of had a basic knowledge of the rules of the game, and there was no roadmap for how to keep stats. You just kind of learn it on the fly. And so Joe, who had been the internal football press box announcer at IU, most people don't know what that is, but it's not the person you hear on the outside that says first down Hoosiers. It's a very dry play-by-play for the writers and other media on the fifth floor of the press box so that they can write their stories as the game's going on. So the dialogue might be Anthony Thompson, number 32, gain of 5 yards, second down from the 25, tackled by Jamie Smith. So that's all you do in the press box in that role. Well, Joe got an opportunity to go work for Don Fisher and Hoosier Sports Network. And when he did that, he recommended me to Kit to do the internal football press box job. That's 1983. So I do that for this fall season, and basketball seasons at this time in 83, 84, Coach Knight's there, and there's the old Indiana Classic. You remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure, a lot of fans remember the two-game series we had at Assembly Hall over the winter. Students are gone. We're doing statistics at Indiana University, not me yet, but Kit asked me to come and help do one statistic for the games that are going on for the Indiana Classic, and it's minutes played. Write down how many minutes each player has to add that up to 200 at the end of the game. So that's what I did. And he said, well, look, I could use you. Just keep coming back for the rest of the season. And so I kept coming back for the rest of the season. Who wouldn't? You have a front row seat on the court, and it doesn't cost you a dime to come. You're now, you know, a ticketed, credentialed staff person. And at the end of the year, I got this check from the university, and I called Kit right away. I said, what's this for? He goes, well, you get paid to do what you did. I go, let me get this right. Floor on the 10-second, I get a seat on the 10-second line, and you pay me to come. He goes, yeah, pretty much. I go, can I come back next year? So he, you know, I've been doing that same job, not minutes played anymore, but we converted over to a 3-person stack crew from a 7-person stack crew.
Well, the one part of that story is unbelievable is at one point there were no stats or the lack of stats, or I guess they counted what, points, field goals, attempts, free throw attempts? That was it?
No. There were 7 people that did 7 different things.
Somebody would do, you were just assists. 8.
Yeah, there was assists, steals, turnovers was somebody's job. Minutes played was my job.
Gotcha.
Somebody else did, you know, shots and rebounds. Somebody did points. So we each had a different role, and it was, you know, just a way bigger stat crew before technology allowed us to do it on computers with 3 people.
So Kit calls you up one afternoon and says, hey, what are you doing? Let's hang out for a minute. Did he tell you over the phone? What was your reaction when he broached the news? Because I know you talked to Kit enough. It's not like, oh, hey, what are you calling for?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a little surprising for sure. I mean, yeah, I talked to Kit from time to time, but I could tell in his voice this wasn't the normal call. So he was like, he made a little small talk, but he pretty quickly said, I got great news. And then he told me that I was going to be inducted. And then, it took my breath away for a second, for sure. It's just not something I ever expected. And, you know, none of this has been anything I've ever expected. I don't know if anybody would ever say they did expect to go into a Hall of Fame anywhere. I mean, I'm sure people think that, but I certainly didn't for any of these. So, it was humbling. And it still is humbling, and it's quite an honor. And again, to do it in a place where you live, where people you know that know you, that's, I don't know if it gets any better. The National Hall of Fame is great, but people will walk by that little thing that says Mick Renison's in the National Hall of Fame and wonder who the heck that even is. In Bloomington, I think it means way more because people know, I think, or they know me at least now. That's very, very humbling.
Well, it's very cool, and it's an honor. An honor well deserved. The 13th class will go in Friday night. Mick Renheisen will be a part of it. Again, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. And you can go to just Google that or MonroeCountySHOF.com and get your tickets, read about all the inductees. And who's in charge of the program this year? Who's your MC?
I think it's Joe.
Oh, good.
Smith.
Well, I haven't seen Smitty in a couple weeks. You know, when he's worked here for 118 years, he's got 5,000 vacation days, Mick, and he's just popped into his booth now, so I'll have to go over there and rattle his cage, but we'll have a big he's been featuring folks throughout the week, and we'll continue to do so, and we'll have a big talk about it on Big Show Friday as well. You got family coming in? How does this work? You get a table, get a couple tables? How's that go?
Yeah, we have a table full of my 3 daughters and their significant others, and then my 2 grandchildren, my twin grandkids from my middle daughter will be here, so we have all of them at a table, and then a couple of other friends have said that they have signed up to attend as well, so we'll have I don't know, some others scattered around, and that's, again, very nice to know that your family can join you. I'm grateful for them for a lot of reasons, because, you know, the time that you put in as someone in a position like mine in parks or any public figure position takes you away from your family a lot, and certainly sporting activities occur when you might otherwise be spending time with your family, so there's a lot of hours away from them that I appreciate their understanding and patience, because you have to have that to be either married to or a family member of someone who does the kind of things that I've been fortunate enough to get involved in for my 40 years.
Well, I wish you nothing but congratulations, my friend. I've enjoyed our relationship here on the radio and off the radio, and congratulate. I don't know what else to say. This is great, and you're fully, fully deserving. You've been a great servant of the city, and I think that's part of it as well that people might not understand. You did not sign up for this for the 2-year, $4.3 million salary that comes along with that. That's not always the case, but your work here is not unnoticed, and it has set an unbelievable foundation for this community moving forward. Enjoy your night on Friday night, and I can't wait to hear how it went, buddy. Thanks for your time this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Glass. I appreciate it.